Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Fantasize Me, the podcast where I take characters real or imagined, and I fantasize them as D&D characters. I'm your host, Zach Kapp, and today we are going to be turning Bruce Lee into a D&D character. So Bruce Lee's father was a famous Cantonese opera singer based in British Hong Kong. On December 1939, his parents went to Chinatown, San Francisco in California, because his father was on an international opera tour. And Lee was born there on November 27th, 1940, which made him a dual Hong Kong and United States citizen by birth. When he was 4 months old, the Lee family returned to Hong Kong. So his father was famous, he was an opera star, so Lee was introduced to the world of cinema at a very young age, and his first role was as a baby in the film Golden Gate Girl. And his Chinese stage name was Lee the Little Dragon, which is for the fact that he was born in both the hour and the year of the dragon by the Chinese zodiac. When he was 9, he co-starred with his father in The Kid. This was 1950, and it was his first leading role. And by the time he was 18, he had already appeared in 20 films. Just for comparison's sake, I am going to be turning 27 in less than a month, and I've appeared in 0 films, so that's impressive. Time moves so quickly. Anyway, he would get into a lot of fights as a kid. He was involved in several street fights, so his parents decided he should probably be trained in martial arts. Lee's friend introduced him to Ip Man. I think that's how you say the name. But he was rejected from learning Wing Chun Kung Fu under him because there was this just long-standing rule in the Chinese martial arts world not to teach foreigners. And it's not because he had American citizenship, his parents are still Chinese, but his mother was half German. So that made Lee one quarter German. But his friend spoke on his behalf and Lee was eventually accepted into the school. But after a year into this martial arts training, a lot of Ip Man's other students refused to train with Lee because of his mixed ancestry. Because the Chinese were just generally against teaching their martial arts techniques to non-Asians. But he continued to train privately with his master. In 1958, Lee won the Hong Kong school's boxing tournament. He knocked out the previous champion. And then also that year, Lee was a cha-cha dancer, winning Hong Kong's Crown Colony Cha-Cha Championship. I didn't know that. Also, cha-cha championship is very fun to say. I suggest you do it. So, until his late teens, his street fights became more frequent. He was just getting into loads of fights. He was not doing well in school. Lee's mother had to go to a police station and sign a document saying that she would take full responsibility for Lee's actions if they released him into her custody. And this is after a rooftop fight where he fought students from a rival martial arts school. That is no joke. In 1958, students from a rival martial arts school challenged Lee's school. And they had a rooftop fight. So his parents decided to send him to the United States. He's an American citizen. He can stay with his older sister, Agnes Lee, who is already living with family friends in San Francisco. And after a few months living with her, Lee moved to Seattle to continue his high school education. Also in 1959, he started to teach martial arts. So Lee called what he taught Junfeng Kung Fu, which literally translated to Bruce Lee's Kung Fu, which was kind of his approach to Wing Chun. He opened his first martial arts school called the Lee Junfeng Kung Fu Institute in Seattle. He completed his high school education. He received his diploma from Edison Technical School. And in 1961, Lee enrolled in the University of Washington and studied dramatic arts, philosophy, psychology, a bunch of other things. And Lee's official major was drama. Many people think that it was philosophy or thought that it was philosophy, but it was drama. He dropped out of college a few years later and moved to Oakland to live with James Yim Lee, who was already a well-known Chinese martial artist in the area. He was 20 years older than Bruce Lee, but together, they founded the second Junfen martial arts studio in Oakland. In the 1964 Long Beach International Karate Championships, he gained a lot for his one-inch punch. So, I don't know if you know what that is. He stands with his arm, like, slightly extended, and then without retracting his arm, he just delivers a punch with an inch of space to move through. And he had a volunteer who he hit, which sent him backwards. He fell into a chair, which was meant to prevent injury, but there was just so much momentum behind the punch in his falling that he just toppled over the chair and fell to the floor. And the volunteers just tells him, like, don't do this type of demonstration again. The last time he punched me, I had to stay home from work because the pain in his chest was unbearable. Just insane. 1 inch, he could just, so strong. So powerful. From 1966 to 1967, he's gotten into acting now. He played the role of Kato in the show The Green Hornet, which was based on a radio show by the same name. It just lasted one season, but Lee and his acting partner Williams also appeared as their characters in 3 crossover episodes of Batman. So I think that's really cool. Bruce Lee was in Batman. Of course he was. Why not? But this show, The Green Hornet, introduced this, you know, now adult, obviously, Bruce Lee, to an American audience. And it became the first popular American show which presented Asian-style martial arts. The director of The Green Hornet wanted Lee to fight in, like, the typical American style, like fists and punches. But Lee's like, no. I'm a professional martial artist. I'm going to fight in the style of my expertise. The problem was, Lee moved so fast, his movements could not be caught on film. Just let that sink in. He would move so fast that the camera could not keep up. He had to slow his movements down so that he could actually be filmed. After this, Lee kind of looked at martial arts with a more philosophical lens. And he took the view that traditional martial arts techniques were just, they were too rigid, they were too formalized to be practical in scenarios of just, like, chaotic fighting, which fighting in reality usually is, like the street fighting that he kind of grew up with. So he developed a system with an emphasis on practicality, flexibility, speed, and efficiency. So he would use a bunch of different methods of training, like weight training, running, stretching, even like boxing and fencing. So Lee wanted to get rid of the formalized approach of fighting, and he felt that the system that he made, which was the Junfan Kung Fu, was also too restrictive. So he would eventually create a martial arts called Jeet Kune Do, or the Way of the Intercepting Fist, which is a term that apparently he would later regret because Jeet Kune Do implied just like specific parameters that styles connote. But the idea of his martial arts was to kind of exist outside of parameters and limitations, which was the style of no style. So through the next year, Lee would, you know, try to act some more. But he got a lot of just like supporting roles in the US and he was not happy about that. So he returned to Hong Kong and he was unaware that the Green Hornet kind of blew up in Hong Kong and it was like unofficially referred to as the Kato Show, which he was Kato. And he was recognized in Hong Kong as the star of the show. So this kind of led to him signing a film contract. In 1972, he would play Fist of Fury, which broke box office records set previously by his movie that came before that, The Big Boss, in 71. He later formed his own company, Concord Production Inc., and his third film was Way of the Dragon. In 1973, Lee was diagnosed with cerebral edema. There was too much fluid in his head. They were able to reduce the swelling. And then a couple months later, he's complaining of a headache. So one of his friends gives him a painkiller. He went to lie down for a nap, and they were unable to wake him up. So autopsy reports showed that Lee's brain had swollen considerably, and the autopsy found this painkiller in his system. So his friend stated in an interview that Lee died as a reaction to an ingredient in the painkiller. So he was only 32 when he died, and he did so much. Obviously, I'm glossing over a lot of things because his work was just so influential. It's hard to encapsulate it all in a few short minutes before I go into turning him into a D&D character. But yeah, Time Magazine named him one of the 100 most important people of the 20th century, and he really did a lot. He is credited with helping to change the way Asians were presented in American films, and he's largely responsible for launching the kung fu craze of the 1970s. He introduced kung fu to the West. He inspired a wave of Western martial arts films and television shows that launched the careers of like Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal, Chuck Norris. And this also helped kind of the general integration of Asian martial arts into Western action films. And Enter the Dragon has been cited as one of the most influential action films of all time. And Lee's system of martial arts, Jeet Kune Do, is kind of the, some would say like the precursor to MMA, mixed martial arts, because he created it to kind of exist outside of the traditional styles of martial arts. So that was kind of mixed martial arts. So a lot of really cool things that he did. So now that we know a bit of his background, let's get into it by picking his D&D background. Okay, I'm thinking either athlete or entertainer, because I'm trying to decide which one I want to showcase, because it was definitely both. I mean, I'm going to try to showcase both the best I can. I think I'm going to do entertainer, because I think athlete is something more easily shown through D&D mechanics. Although I guess they can both, whatever, I'm going with entertainer. So, he's going to have skill proficiencies in acrobatics and performance, beautiful, as well as tool proficiencies in disguise kits and one type of musical instrument. I have no idea what instrument he would play. I don't think he played any, so I'm gonna go with the baritone sax. He was a sax man. That's fine, okay. Next, we have to pick a race. I am thinking for this one, we go Dragonborn, because he was born in the year of the dragon and the hour of the dragon, according to the Chinese zodiac. His stage name was Lee the Little Dragon. So I'm going to go with Dragonborn. So as a Dragonborn, he's going to get +2 to strength and +1 to charisma. He's going to have draconic ancestry. So we're going to choose one type of dragon for him from the draconic ancestry table, which determines some things for him. So I think I'm going to go, should I just do red? I feel like, or gold. Gold dragon. Yeah, okay. That makes more sense. That makes the most sense. I mean, his first role was as a baby in the film Golden Gate Girl, and his biggest movies, Way of the Dragon and Enter the Dragon, were by Golden Harvest. Right? Okay, so gold dragon. Beautiful. I love that for him. So he is going to have a breath weapon. He can use his action to just shoot out a 15-foot cone of fire now. Each creature in the area has to make a saving throw, and the DC, or the difficulty for this saving throw, is going to be 8, plus his constitution modifier, plus his proficiency bonus. So we don't know what it's going to be, because we don't have his constitution yet. We don't have his stats. And if they fail, they're going to take 2d6 damage on a failed save, or half as much on a successful one. And the damage is going to increase as he levels up. So he can use his breath weapon once per short or long rest. Additionally, he's now going to have resistance to the damage type associated with his draconic ancestry. So that is fire, so he's just going to start with resistance to fire damage, which is very cool. For languages, he can speak, read, and write common and draconic. Now that we have his background, entertainer, and his race, Dragonborn, we can roll for stats. So that's when we take a d6, a six-sided die, roll it 4 times, drop the lowest number, and add up the remaining 3 in order to get one of his 6 ability scores. So we're going to do that 6 times. Okay, so I rolled for his stats, and he did very well. He got 17, 15, 12, 11, 16, and 13. Very good. All of them are above 10, which is like the average person will have 10s. So he's above average in everything. So let's see, what will his highest stat be? I'm thinking it's going to be strength. So I'm going to slot that 17 into strength. He gets a +2 to that stat for being a Dragonborn. So that's going to bump that up to a 19, which is a +4 modifier. So good to start with a +4 at first level. Awesome. Next highest is 16. I'm gonna do dexterity, because he's very strong, but also very fast and lithe and agile. So 16 dexterity is a +3 modifier. 15 is the next highest, so let's put that. I'm thinking charisma, but if I do that, he'll only have a +1 to constitution, and he seems like he did have a very you know, strong and grounded constitution. So I'm going to do 15 constitution, which is a +2 modifier. And then I'll put the next highest into charisma, which is a 13. That gets a +1 from him being a dragonborn, which bumps it up to a 14 or a +2 modifier. Next is 12. I'm going to do 12 in wisdom and then 11 in intelligence. So a +1 in wisdom, a +0 in intelligence, because it just seemed like he was more wise than he was intelligent. So his starting stats are excellent. They're really good, which is great because the previous episode, Alice's stats were bad. So this is refreshing. So he has 19 strength, 16 dexterity, 15 constitution, 11 intelligence, 12 wisdom, and 14 charisma. Perfect. Now that we have all of that, let's actually pick his class. This is tough because he was a performer first. So I'm tempted to go into Bard. But just because he was performer, he doesn't seem Bard-like. He seems more martial arts-like, obviously. He was a performer, but I'm going to go with fighter. I am going to start with fighter because, you know, he got his start fighting. Not necessarily martial arts, just fighting and boxing. So we're going to start him off as a fighter, not a bard. Even though, you know, in my heart of hearts, I do want to make everyone a bard. Even if they're the furthest thing from a bard, I can find a connection to make them a bard. One tiny speck that I can hold on to. But no, we're going to start with fighter. Beautiful. So as a fighter, he's going to have proficiencies in light armor, medium armor, heavy armor, and shields. I don't think he'll likely be using heavy armor and shields because, you know, he wouldn't. He's proficient in simple weapons and martial weapons, in strength and constitution saving throws, and he can choose two skills from acrobatics, animal handling, athletics, history, insight, intimidation, perception, and survival. So he already has proficiency in acrobatics from that. So I'm going to do athletics because he's very athletic. And then how about intimidation? Because he could definitely be scary. He could punch you from 1 inch away and just break your body apart. So that's, yeah, that's intimidating. So as a fighter, he starts with a fighting style, which is a particular form of fighting that he's adopted as his own style. This is tough because I don't see him using a weapon, but I don't know if I want to give him unarmed fighting. I don't think he needs unarmed fighting. So I'm just going to give him, I'm going to give him defense. It's very boring, but, or maybe blind fighting. I feel like I give everyone blind fighting. Well, that's because it's good. I'm going to give him blind fighting. So defense would have given him an extra armor class and made him a little harder to hit. Blind fighting gives him blind sense within a range of 10 feet. So within this range, he can effectively see anything that isn't behind total cover, even if he's blinded or in darkness. Also, he can see invisible creatures within that range unless the creature successfully hides from him. So if they make a successful stealth check or take the hide action and succeed. Otherwise, he can see them even when they're invisible. That's so cool. How is that for battle instincts, being able to just see invisible things? So, okay, he has blind fighting. And also at first level, he's going to gain second wind. So on his turn, he can just use a bonus action to regain hit points equal to 1d10 plus his fighter level. Really good at first levels, but it's not very good after a while because it doesn't scale. It doesn't improve at all. It's just going to stay at 1d10 plus 1. And he can use this once per short or long rest. At low levels, great. At higher levels, fine. It's, you know, it is what it is. We're going to go second level into fighter, where he's going to gain action surge. I love this. So on his turn, he can take one additional action on top of his regular action and possible bonus action. So he can just take another action. He can attack, he can bonus action second wind, and then he can action surge to attack again. And he can use this once per short or long rest. So it's just such a cool ability. Fighters have really good Nova ability, Nova ability is just, you know, you burn really brightly for a little bit and then you kind of burn out. And that's what Action Surge is. It just gives him one turn where he can do a lot of shit and then, you know, he can't do it again. Third level in Fighter, he's going to pick his Martial Archetype. That's the Fighter subclass. So what Fighter subclass seems the most Bruce Lee, you know? I'm thinking we're doing Fighter just to support the main class. I'm guessing you can guess what that is. So I think what's going to support it the most is the Champion subclass. So all this gives him is what's called Improved Critical. So his weapon attacks score a critical hit on a roll of 19 or 20. Normally it's just 20, it's a nat 20, that's a critical hit. You double the dice rolled for damage, but now it is a 19 or 20. And I think that's it with Fighter. I think we're now going to multiclass at 4th level into Monk. So 4th level going into Monk, we might jump back into Fighter at some point because as a 4th level fighter, he's going to gain an ability score improvement, which might be helpful or might be fun or give him something better than a level of Monk would. But we'll see. So a 1st level Monk. I think I've only done like one Monk in this podcast, and there have been 30 something characters at this point, but I just don't really like the Monk class. Like, it's fine, but I think Monk is best used as a multi-class. So, you know, starting in Monk and then multi-classing and finishing in another class, because you get a bunch of good Monk things at lower levels and then just not great things as you go. Like, they don't improve much. You know, I was talking, Second Wind doesn't scale very well. Neither does Monk, in my opinion. I'm sure there are people who love Monks, and I would never take that away from them. But there you have it. Now, normally, you wouldn't be able to multiclass into Monk unless you had a 13 Dexterity and a 13 Wisdom. His wisdom's 12, it's close enough. 13 is such an arbitrary number, it's fine. He's gonna multiclass into Monk. He's not gonna gain any additional proficiencies from this, but he's gonna gain some really cool stuff. So at 1st level, he gains Unarmored Defense. So while he's wearing no armor and not wearing a shield, his armor class is going to be 10 plus his dexterity modifier plus his wisdom modifier. So if he's not wearing armor or using a shield, his armor class is going to be 14 because 10 plus his 3 dexterity plus his 1 wisdom modifier. But he's proficient in all armor, so it would probably be better for him to actually wear that armor. Also at 1st level, he's going to gain Martial Arts. Of course, it's hard to have a martial arts character without putting them into Monk, because they have an ability called Martial Arts. So while he's unarmed, wielding only Monk weapons, and he's not wearing armor or wielding a shield, so I guess he's not going to be wearing armor, even though he's proficient in all of them, and I think that's stupid, because sometimes you can do martial arts in armor, D&D, come on. But that's fine, I guess he'll just be naked, or whatever. So now he can use Dexterity instead of Strength for the attack and damage rolls of his unarmed strikes and Monk weapons. His Strength is better than Dexterity, so we're just going to use Strength. For unarmed strikes, the damage is typically just 1 plus your Strength modifier, but now he can roll a d4 in place of the normal damage of those. And that's going to increase as he gains levels in Monk. Also, when he uses the attack action with an unarmed strike or a Monk weapon on his turn, he can make one unarmed strike as a bonus action. For example, if he takes the attack action and he attacks with, like, a quarterstaff, he can also use a bonus action to attack with an unarmed strike. And that's, you know, obviously if he hasn't already taken a bonus action like Second Wind. 5th level, that is 2nd in Monk, he's going to gain access to Ki. So he now has this mystical energy of Ki that's represented by Ki points. And he's going to have one Ki point for every level in Monk. So he's a 2nd level Monk, he has 2 Ki points. When he's a 3rd level Monk, he'll have 3 Ki points. 4th level, 4, you know how to count probably. And he can spend these Ki points to fuel various Ki features. He starts knowing 3 features: Flurry of Blows, Patient Defense, and Step of the Wind. He regains expended Ki points during short or long rests. Some of the Ki features require the target to make a saving throw to resist the effects of the feature, and a save throw DC is just what a target has to equal or beat in order to resist the effects. So as I said earlier, for his awesome dragon breath he can do, that uses constitution for the save DC. So that's going to be 8 plus his constitution, which is 2, plus his proficiency bonus, which at this level went up to 3. So it's going to be a DC 13 save on his dragon breath, but he only has 1 wisdom, so it's going to be a DC 12 saving throw for his monk abilities. In Flurry of Blows, immediately after he takes the attack action on his turn, he can spend 1 key point to make 2 unarmed strikes as a bonus action. With martial arts, he can attack and then make an unarmed strike as a bonus action. This just lets you do an additional unarmed strike as a bonus action. Patient defense is where he can spend a key point to take the dodge action as a bonus action on his turn. And step in the wind is 1 key point to take the disengage or dash action as a bonus action on his turn. And his jump distance will also be doubled for that turn. He also gains unarmored movement, so as I said, he's not wearing any armor. His speed is going to increase by 10 while not wearing armor or wielding a shield. So a dragonborn's movement speed is 30. It is now 40, so he's a bit faster than everyone else. It's been like 45 minutes and I'm only on 6th level, so I'm gonna try to go a bit quicker here because I have things to do. 6th level, 3rd in monk, he gains deflect missiles. When he's hit by a ranged weapon attack, he can use his reaction to deflect or catch the missile. So when he takes this reaction, the damage he takes from the attack is reduced by 1d10 plus his dexterity modifier plus his monk level. So his dexterity modifier is plus 3, his monk level is 3, so it's going to be 1d10 plus 6. If he manages to reduce the attack's damage to 0, he can actually catch the missile if it's small enough for him to hold in one hand and if he has at least one hand free. And if he does catch a missile this way, he can spend a key point to make a ranged attack with the weapon or piece of ammunition he just caught as part of that reaction. So that is so cool. Someone can shoot an arrow at him, he can use deflect missiles and use his reaction to reduce the damage, and if he reduces it to 0, he can just catch the arrow and hurl it back at the attacker. That's pretty fun. Also, as a 3rd level monk, he gains the Monastic Tradition. That is the monk subclass. And I think I'm going to go Way of the Open Hand. So I'm picking Way of the Open Hand because it sounds like it kind of uses, or practitioners of this D&D monk subclass kind of use, they take multiple aspects from other martial arts. They can do a lot of different things, and that's kind of what it sounded like he wanted his martial art that he created to do. So he now has the Open Hand Technique, where he can manipulate his enemy's ki when he harnesses his own. So whenever he hits a creature with one of the attacks granted by his Flurry of Blows, which are those 2 unarmed strike bonus actions, he can impose one of the following effects on the target. It has to succeed on a dexterity saving throw or be knocked prone. It must make a strength saving throw, and if it fails, he can just push it up to 10 feet away from you. Or they cannot take reactions until the end of your next turn. So this is so cool. This definitely reminds me of that 1-inch punch, which is just so much power that they can be knocked over, they can be pushed away, or they can just be so taken aback by the power of the strike that they are unable to react. Good job, Zach. That's clever to do. Not really. Anyway, so 7th level, that is 4th in monk, he's going to gain an ability score improvement. So he can increase 1 ability score of his choice by 2, or 2 ability scores of his choice by 1, or he can take a feat. I think right now we're going to increase ability scores. So we're definitely going to max out strength. So strength takes 1 of those points to go up to a 20, which is now a plus 5 modifier, as high as it can go without the use of like special abilities or magical items. And then we have another point left over. I'm thinking, should I put it into wisdom? Ability scores, the modifiers for ability scores only go up every even number, so changing his wisdom from a 12 to 13 won't do anything, but that was kind of the prerequisite for him multiclassing into monk in the first place. Yeah, okay, I'm gonna do it. Why not? I don't care. So 13 wisdom, that doesn't change anything, but we'll, I don't know, we might increase it further as we go on. Also, as a 4th level monk, he gains slow fall, which is such a fun ability. He can now use his reaction when he falls to reduce any falling damage he takes by an amount equal to 5 times his monk level. So I think like the max falling damage you can take is if you fall 200 feet, you take 20d6 damage. Which sounds like a lot, but really it averages out to 70 damage. That's not that much for higher level characters. And this already allows him to reduce the damage by 5 times his monk level, so he would only take 50 damage from that average damage, which I don't think is even enough to drop him. He's only 7th level, but he probably has more than 50 hit points, or around 50 hit points. So he could take the maximum amount of falling damage, 20d6, and still be fine. Which is pretty cool, I love that for him. So, 5th level in monk, he's gonna gain extra attack. It's exactly what it sounds like, so he can attack twice instead of once whenever he takes the attack action on his turn. Also at 5th level, his martial arts die goes up to a d6, so now he does a d6 of damage on his unarmed strikes, 1d6 plus 5. So now he can attack, use flurry of blows to do 2 unarmed strikes as a bonus action, and then just attack again, and then action surge and attack another 2 times. So he can potentially attack 6 times in 1 turn, which is, very good. Also at 5th level, he gains what I think is the monk's best ability, Stunning Strike. This ability is, I think it's easily the best monk ability. I just think it is. So when he hits a creature with a melee weapon attack, he can spend 1 ki point to attempt a Stunning Strike. So the target has to succeed on a Constitution saving throw or be stunned until the end of his next turn. This is insane because right now he's a 5th level monk, so he has 5 ki points. So he can potentially try to stun a creature 5 times. 5 times! It's, you know, only a matter of time before they fail, and then once they are stunned, he's going to gain advantage on his attacks. Remember, he's a champion fighter, so on a 19 or 20 he crits. So he'll probably be critting quite a bit if he keeps either using the Wave of the Open Hand to knock people prone and get advantage on his melee attack rolls, or stunning them and getting advantage on his melee attack rolls. But it's such an awesome ability because they pretty much just skip their next turn then. If he's fighting one-on-one, he can just keep stunning them until he kills them. It's ridiculous. And before you get all in a huff, I know that the champion subclass says that they have to be weapon attacks in order to score a critical on 19 or 20, but do you really think Bruce Lee's fists don't count as weapons? Haha! Wrong. 9th level, that is 6th in monk, he's going to gain ki empowered strikes. So now all of his unarmed strikes are going to count as magical. And this is just for the purpose of overcoming resistance and immunity to non-magical attacks and damage. Like, ghosts are resistant to non-magical melee attacks like that. But now it doesn't matter. Bruce Lee can punch ghosts. He can punch ghosts right in their face. I love that. Forget Ghostbusters. Who are you going to call? Bruce Lee. Right? You know? Okay. Also, at 6th level, he's going to gain another monastic tradition feature from the Way of the Open Hand, called Wholeness of Body. So now, as an action, he can regain hit points equal to 3 times his monk level, and he has to finish a long rest before he can use this feature again. So right now, he can just use an action to automatically heal 18 hit points, and then use a bonus action, Second Wind, from the fighter class to regain 1d10 plus 3 hit points. So he can potentially heal 31 hit points on one turn. I really like that because martial characters, you know, like fighters and rogues and monks, often lack good means of healing. But now this is something. He can only use it once per long rest, but still, it's a pretty cool thing, and as he gains levels in monk, it's just gonna get a bit better. 10th level, that is 7th in monk, he gains the evasion ability. I love it. So when he's subjected to an effect that allows him to make a dexterity saving throw or take only half damage, he's instead going to take no damage if he succeeds, and even if he fails, he's only going to take half damage. So say he's fighting another dragonborn, and the dragon shoots this cone of fire at him. He's gonna make a dexterity saving throw, and if he succeeds, he's just not gonna take any damage. Or someone tries to hit him with lightning bolt or something, he can potentially take no damage. And even if he fails his dexterity saving throw, he's just going to take half. It is such a cool ability, and I think it makes sense for a martial artist being able to dodge out of harm's way very dexterously. And he's also going to gain the ability Stillness of Mind. So he can now use an action to end one effect on himself that's causing him to be charmed or frightened, which is awesome because being charmed really sucks. Being frightened also sucks. I think being charmed is definitely worse. But now he doesn't even really have to worry about that because he can just use his action to end that effect on him. Very cool. I always say like, oh, I don't really like monks. But then whenever I make a monk character, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. Hey, that's pretty cool. Oh, hey, look at that. That's pretty cool. But whatever. Flip-flopping's not bad all the time, right? 11th level, that's an 8th level monk. He's going to gain an ability score improvement. I think for this one, we are going to increase his wisdom to 14, which is now a plus 2 modifier, and increase his constitution to 16, which is now a plus 3 modifier. Constitution helps to determine hit points, and it's added retroactively when it goes up. So he's an 11th level character, and he gained a plus 1 to his constitution modifier, so he automatically gains 11 hit points. And I think that's probably the last ability score improvement we're going to use to, you know, improve his ability scores. I think the rest are going to be reserved for feats. So I think his stats are good enough as they are. Don't need to fuss with them anymore. 12th level, 9th in monk, he gains unarmored movement improvement. Unarmored movement improvement. That's fun to say. Oh, I should also say that his unarmored movement increases at certain levels. So as a 6th level monk, it increased to 15 feet. 9th level is still 15 feet, but next level as a 10th level monk, it'll increase to 20 feet. As a 14th level monk, it'll increase to 25 feet. We can't get to an 18th level monk, but if we did, it would have increased to 30 feet. Right now, it's an additional 15 feet, so his movement speed is 45. But anyway, and now with his unarmored movement improvement, he now has the ability to move along vertical surfaces and across liquids on his turn without falling during the move. So he can't end his turn along a vertical surface, and he can't end his turn just standing in a pool of water, but he can run across them. So that's really cool. So now he can just run up walls or run across ponds. And again, he has 45 movement speed, so he could use his action to dash and then use Step of the Wind to bonus action dash. He can move 135 feet, and he can just run 135 feet up a sheer wall if he wanted to, or just up a cliff. And even if something happens and he falls, he's now a 9th level monk, so he's going to take 45 less falling damage. He'd be fine. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Okay, 10th level monk, that is Purity of Body. So he's now immune to disease and poison. He can't be diseased. He can't be poisoned. Pretty cool. 14th level, 11th in monk, he gains another monastic tradition feature from the Way of the Open Hand called Tranquility. So at the end of a long rest, he's going to gain the effects of a sanctuary spell that lasts until the start of his next long rest. The saving throw DC for the spell is going to be 8, plus his wisdom modifier, plus his proficiency bonus. He is 14th level, so his proficiency bonus is now plus 5. We increased his wisdom to plus 2, so it's now a DC 15 for the spell Sanctuary. But what it is he's warded against attacks. So any creature who targets him with a harmful attack or spell has to make a wisdom saving throw. Again, that DC is going to be 15, and if they fail, they have to choose a new target or lose the attack or spell. The spell isn't going to protect Lee from area effects like Fireball, but again, he has evasion and also resistance to fire damage, so he's not going to take much from that anyway. The downside to this, because this sounds like such a cool ability, and it is at first, but if Lee makes an attack or casts a spell that affects an enemy creature, the spell ends. So, like, I get why that is for balance reasons, but I feel like it just makes this ability kind of bad. You know, he gets all of these awesome effects if he doesn't do anything. Like, why? I can think of a lot of ways this would be useful. But also, is it really that useful? Is it? I don't know. I'll let you decide. Anyway, 15th level, that is 12th in monk. Hey, look at that. Another ability score improvement. I think we are finally going to give him a feat, which is just like a special ability. I'm kind of tempted to give him the mobile feat. That'll increase his movement speed by 10. When he takes the dash action, difficult terrain isn't going to cost him extra movement. And when he makes a melee attack against a creature, he's not going to provoke opportunity attacks from that creature for the rest of the turn. Even if he misses on his attack, they're still not going to be able to attack him in an opportunity attack. So I'm thinking that would be fun for a martial artist because he can make so many attacks in one turn. He can just run through people, attacking each of them, trying to stun them. And even if he fails on stunning them, just because he tried to attack them, or he did attack them, just didn't stun them, they can't take opportunity attacks against him, and he can just run past them. So that's one I'm thinking. Right? I'm thinking that could be fun. Yeah, okay, I'm thinking mobile. So his speed increases by 10. When he dashes, extra terrain doesn't cost him additional movement. And when he attacks a creature, he won't provoke opportunity attacks from them until the end of his turn. Very cool. So his movement speed, as I said before, because he's now a 12th level monk, his unarmored movement increased it by 20. So he now has a 60 movement speed, 30 from being a dragonborn, 20 from unarmored movement, and 10 from mobile. Which, as I said before, he can potentially triple his movement speed by using his action to dash, using Step of the Wind to dash as a bonus action. And now difficult terrain isn't going to cost him extra movement, so he can just run 180 feet up a wall. He can run on water for 180 feet. That's very far. And turns in combat for D&D are just like, it's like a second. So he can move 180 feet in a second. That's so cool. Timing for combat in D&D is always kind of wonky. I never really pay too much attention to it. But that's wild to think that he can just be a blur, which, if you'll remember, he fought so fast that he was a blur. So I like that that's kind of represented now in his build. 13th level in Monk, 16th overall, he gains Tongue of the Sun and Moon. So now he can understand all spoken languages. Also, any creature that can understand a language can understand what he says. So that's really awesome because he only started with 2 languages. I feel like most characters I make start with at least 3. He only started with 2, but now it doesn't matter because he can understand all spoken language and he can essentially speak all languages. I mean, he can't, but he kind of can. You get it. Maybe you don't. It's fine. 17th level, that's 14th in Monk, he's going to gain Diamond Soul. So he is now proficient in all saving throws. Normally, hey, you're just proficient in 2, he's proficient in all 6. So now all of his saving throws get a +6. So remember, his dexterity saving throws are now going to be a +9, and he's going to take no damage when he dodges out of the way of an attack with a dexterity saving throw. Also, if he makes a saving throw and he fails, he can just spend a key point to reroll it and take the second result. So that is a pretty cool ability. You have to take the second roll, even if it's lower, but it's fine. 18th level, that is 15th in Monk, that is Timeless Body. So now he cannot be aged magically. He can still die of old age, however, but in addition, he's no longer going to need food or water. So now Bruce Lee doesn't need to eat, he doesn't need to drink, which I think means he no longer needs to go to the bathroom, which is pretty cool. If I could give that up, I would. I'm sure most of us would. It's just such a time suck. Like, I drink so much water, and then I'm just always in the bathroom, and then I just have to drink more water and just go into the bathroom. It's just, it's too much, alright? It is. But now Bruce Lee doesn't even have to worry about it. No potty breaks for him. I love that. 19th level, that is 16th in Monk. His final ability score improvement that he's going to get, so I say let's give him another feat. I had said I wanted his, you know, acting to be represented more, but I think the entertainer background is probably all we're going to do for it. Because yes, he did act a lot, but as I think on it, his acting was largely based around his incredible martial arts. So I say let's give him something else along the lines of mobile that further details his skills as a martial artist, as a fighter. How about Sentinel? Sentinel is a really great ability. So now, when he hits a creature with an opportunity attack, the creature's speed is going to become zero for the rest of the turn. I really like this because, you know, because of mobile, if he attacks someone, they can't take opportunity attacks against them. But if he takes an opportunity attack against someone else and he hits, their movement speed is zero. They're just stuck there. And I love the ability for him to kind of just immobilize people who try to run away from him. It's very cool. Creatures are going to provoke opportunity attacks from him even if they disengage. So normally if you take the disengage action, that means you can't have any opportunity attacks taken against you. But now, even if they do disengage, he can still hit them. In my experience, opportunity attacks aren't extremely common, but Sentinel helps with that. So when a creature within 5 feet of him makes an attack against a target other than him, he can use his reaction to make a melee weapon attack against the attacking creature. So if he's just next to someone and they attack one of his allies, he can use his reaction to just attack them, even though it's not an opportunity attack. It's still kind of an opportunity attack for him because he just moves so fast. And I love that. That's so cool. So swift. Anyway, 20th level, the final level, that is going to be 17th in Monk. That is the final monastic tradition feature from the Way of the Open Hand called Quivering Palm, which is, I think, far and away one of the most powerful abilities in D&D. It's insane. Listen to this, okay? When Bruce Lee hits a creature with an unarmed strike, he can spend 3 ki points to start these imperceptible vibrations, which last for a number of days equal to his monk level, which is 17 days. The vibrations are harmless unless Lee uses his actions to end them. To do so, he and the target have to be on the same plane of existence, but when he uses this action, the creature has to make a constitution saving throw. And the spell save DC for this is going to be 8 plus 6 plus 2. So a DC 16 constitution saving throw. And if they fail, they die. That's it. If they fail the constitution saving throw, they are reduced to 0 hit points. So I guess they can make, you know, saving throws to potentially save themselves. But essentially, he can just hit them and then they die. And that's it. Even if they succeed on that constitution saving throw from the Quivering Palm ability, they're still going to take 10d10 necrotic damage. Insane! That's an insane ability! He can only have one creature under the effect of the feature at a time, and he can choose to end the vibrations harmlessly without using an action, but this is just such a crazy ability, because he can attack so many times on a turn. He can just make 6 unarmed strikes, and each time, well, not each time, because he'll use a key point to do Flurry of Blows, so that's 16. So 5 times he can try to use the Quivering Palm ability to just kill his opponent. That's wild. That's insane. I love that for him. So that's Bruce Lee, right? There he is. So Bruce Lee, the little dragon, background entertainer, race, he is a gold dragonborn. He's a level 3 champion fighter and a level 17 Way of the Open Hand monk. His ending stats were 20 strength, 16 dexterity, 16 constitution, 11 intelligence, 14 wisdom, and 14 charisma. For skills, he only had 4 skills that he was proficient in, which is definitely on the low side of things. But he's good at a lot of other things. So he has plus 9 to acrobatics, plus 11 to athletics, plus 8 to intimidation, and plus 8 to performance. And I think if we were going to give him 4 skill proficiencies, those would probably be the 4 that made the most sense. Saving throws, remember, he's proficient in all of them. So he has plus 11 to strength, plus 9 to dexterity, plus 9 to constitution, plus 6 to intelligence, plus 8 to wisdom, and plus 8 to charisma. That is so awesome. He's going to be so good at resisting effects. Seriously, it's so cool. Languages, he has common and draconic, but that doesn't really matter too much because he has the tongue of the sun and moon, so he can understand all spoken languages and he can convey what he's saying when he speaks to anyone, regardless of language, so that is pretty cool. Tool proficiencies, he's proficient in disguise kits and the baritone sax, because why not? And for feats, he has mobile and sentinel. So he can move move around, just zip around the battlefield effortlessly, just so fast, hitting everyone he can, stunning them, using Quivering Palm to just potentially kill them. Or he can kind of stand his ground with Sentinel and keep enemies from running away from him as he just wails on them with his unarmed strikes. Right? At that 17th level as a monk, his unarmed strikes moved to a 1d10 for their damage die. So now if he does attack twice, use Flurry of Blows for another 2 attacks, and then Action Surge to attack another 2 times, that is 6 attacks. So that's potentially 6d10 plus 30 damage in one turn. And remember, he gets a crit if it is a 19 or 20. So that doubles his chance to crit and deal an additional d10 of damage. And I'm guessing he's going to be critting a lot if he plays strategically, because he can attack, use Flurry of Blows to attack them again, and use an open hand technique to knock them prone or stun them, and get the rest of his attacks with advantage, further increasing his chance of getting a critical hit. That's very cool. So my image of Bruce Lee, you know, he's by himself. He's just chilling. You know, he's just, maybe he's meditating. I don't know. He ran up a cliff and is now just sitting at its peak in perfect contemplation of various philosophies. And someone just attacks him. But it's hard because since Bruce Lee hasn't attacked anyone, he has the sanctuary spell on him. So the attack's most likely going to miss, and then he can just react and attack. He sees just a massive group of people have come to take him out. I don't know, maybe they weren't a fan of his acting in a movie. They're just going up against him. If he wanted to escape, he could potentially just hit a bunch of them and run away from them without taking opportunity attacks, run down the side of this cliff, and even if he doesn't make it off the cliff, he can just jump. Because of his slow fall ability, he's going to take 85 less falling damage. The average of the max falling damage you can take is 70. So there's a very good chance he's just going to take no damage from jumping off this cliff. And if they do try to come after him, they're shooting arrows at them. He can deflect them and even throw them back potentially. If they do manage to wound him, he can just heal himself and then keep fighting with these flurry of blows, with these stunning strikes, with this quivering palm ability that can just wreck them. Truly a force not to be trifled with. And then he goes and, instead of meditating on top of the cliff, he goes and meditates on top of their lifeless bodies. And I think that's very peaceful. It's like telling the universe, hey, I can be like nice and chill, but I can also wreck shit. You're welcome. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Fantasize Me. You can follow me on Twitter at FantasizeMePod. You can email in those character suggestions to FantasizeMePod@gmail.com. Keep them coming. I love it. Over at Ko-fi.com/FantasizeMe, you can see I have the Elemental Codex for sale, which is 100 elemental spells. And I just released yesterday Mundane Backgrounds for Extraordinary Heroes, which contains 10 new backgrounds that people might not view as heroic, including, but not limited to, Dentist, Vice Principal, and Toll Booth Operator. So feel free to pick that up. All through February, it's going to be 50% off. So right now, it is 99 cents USD. So be sure to get that while it's still on sale. And like, and rate, and subscribe. Do all those things that podcasters are supposed to tell you to do at the end. I'm not sure entirely what they are or what you can do, but you'll figure it out if you want to. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll do this again next week. Bye!